Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. Founders, entrepreneurs, and individual professionals, we all need to keep track of ideas that are helping create our today and tomorrow. Bits About Books will strive to find those books and speak to their authors, go behind the scenes and understand what inspired the authors to write the books that they did and how they went about doing so. Through our conversations, we hope to gain insights that will help us to get the most out of our efforts. I'm your host Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform where our mission is to make buying easy. Thank you for your time and for joining us in this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. It means a lot to hear from you. Now on to today's episode with Amos Schwartzwerb, and we speak with him about his latest book, Sell More Faster, The Ultimate Sales Playbook for Startups.
We had a muddy definition of who our customer was, what they were buying from us and why it mattered. And I clicked on to those three things and said, okay, we need to define these things. And we defined them. And, that took, 2, 3, 4 weeks of digging into the data, myself and my team. And we were wholly focused on really tight definitions of who our customer was, what they were buying from us and why it mattered. And at the end of that, when we said, okay, we now know exactly those three things with data. So it was no longer what we believed, but we actually had data to support it. It was sort of like obvious to me that this was our W3 and I say that in this context, which is that I had a small team of people working on this, and we wanted to find a way to get the whole company, the whole sales organization and the whole company aligned and behind this so we can move it forward, because we had so much conviction that we were right. And again, me taking concepts that may be complex or not and trying to make them as simple as possible, for me, it was really obvious to say, great, let's name this thing and call it something that we can describe easily and get everybody behind. So we named it W3, who, what, and why. We described it to the company. Who is our customer? Here's the definition. What are they buying from us? Here's what they're buying from us, and why does it matter to them? Here's what it is. And that simple framework, the whole company was able to understand and believe and get behind. And in that process, we took the company from 7 million to 60 million in a really short amount of time. So we saw it work.
Amos was born in the Bronx, New York, and grew up in Fort Lee, New Jersey. At a young age, Amos started seeking adventure and pushing limits. While attending college at the University of Massachusetts in 1992, Amos fell in love with rock climbing, which brought him to Northern California in 1993 and eventually a job packing boxes for Shoreline Mountain Project. While there, Amos helped turn an old school mail order company into one of the first e-commerce companies which launched his career into the startup world. After Shoreline, Amos went on to 6 other startups, including HotJobs.com, Work.com, Business.com, MySpoonful, Blacklus, and Joust, where his responsibility was always directly related to figuring out product market fit, early sales, and building sales organizations. He moved over to the investor side as managing director of Techstars in Austin. Now, after over 70 seed stage investments, Amos has become one of the most active early stage investors in all of Texas via Techstars Austin. Now, on to this insightful episode with Amos Schwartzwerb. Amos, I'm delighted to have you in Bits About Books, and your book is something so close to my heart. Welcome to Bits About Books.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really, really excited to be on, and I'm honored that you've asked me to be a guest.
You know, there is this whole glamour around raising money for a startup, and very little is spoken about actually getting revenue. How did you come about doing this book?
Oh gosh, the genesis of this book There isn't a single source. So I'm going to try to tell you the story in the most non-convoluted way possible, but it may seem a little convoluted. But I'll start in the middle. The middle is I did not have any intention of writing a book at this time, and particularly I never thought I would write this book or any business book. It wasn't what I was setting out to do originally. My role, I'm the managing director of Techstars in Austin. What that means is that I'm an early stage investor in all sorts of different companies. And I work in it. If you're not familiar with Techstars, Techstars is a global organization. And we run, among other things, we run over 50 accelerators around the world. An accelerator is a place where several companies get together, learn together, and figure out how to build this their individual business. So I run the one in Austin. Been running it for 5 years now, and I've been in the around this for 8 years now. And in my role, I am one of the few people in my organization who do the job that I have now as managing director, who came from a sales background. Most of them came from generalist or tech or product backgrounds. Not all, but most. But I'm one of the very few who came from a sales background. And I was an entrepreneur for over 20 years prior to this role, and in six different organizations, five of which had exits. My responsibility was always around building and growing sales teams. So it's what I know. So that's some context for you. Almost 2 years ago. So another part of my life, completely unrelated to professionals, I'm very active. I ride bikes a lot. I run, I rock climb. I do a lot of other extracurricular things in my life. I keep myself really busy. I kind of like constant movement. I'm either sleeping or I'm doing something. There's not a lot of like sit time for me. Mm-hmm. And so about 2 years ago, I had a really silly accident and tripped off of a curb and tore a bunch of cartilage in my ankle and ripped some tendons in my ankle. And because of that, I was put on the couch and I couldn't get off the couch basically for 4 months. And wow. So here's a person who doesn't like to sit still, is constantly doing things. Suddenly I couldn't do anything other than work, right? And so in a little more context about my job, because I'm one of the few people who have this long sales background, I have become one of the go-to people. Hey, can you help my portfolio company would say, hey, can you come in and do a workshop to our current accelerator about sales? And I would get this question a lot. And so I was sitting here on the couch thinking like, okay, how do I keep myself busy and active and how do I keep my mind moving? And I thought to myself, wouldn't it be interesting if I created a bunch of workshops, a whole series of workshops for my peers that they can go deliver themselves around all the different aspects of sales, from when you are sitting in a coffee shop and you have an idea of some business you might want to create one day, all the way through being a scaled company and, you know, how do you manage a sales team of 1,000 people, whether you're selling to enterprises or small businesses or whatever. So I thought it'd be a fun exercise to come up with a list of potential workshops. And then I figured I would pull my my peers and see which are the ones that they would like me to make. And I had all this time and I could make a couple of the workshops and give them some tools to work with their company. So that was my intention originally.
Right.
So I did that. And what I mapped out ultimately was 18 workshops. And I looked at them and I said, you know, a lot of this, people are not going to understand what they are. I understand what they are without a little bit of context. And so I said, okay, maybe what I'll do is let me turn these workshops into a bunch of blog posts, and then I'll give them the blog posts, and then they can tell me, hey, it would be great to have a workshop on that. And so as I did that, the blog posts as like basically logically for me formed into 6 blog posts rather than 18. And I'm going to jump ahead a little bit. Those 6 blog posts are the 6 chapters of the book. So I wrote the blog posts and I started to circulate them around to some really close friends and peers to get feedback on, did it feel incomplete? Does it make sense? Do you believe it? Do you have a different point of view? And just, I wanted to make them really good. And again, I had the time and I wanted to do a great job here so that they can be something that could stand alone for a really long time. And this is where serendipity is a really interesting creature, and especially in my life. Mm-hmm. Around that same time, I got an email from an old friend who works in publishing, who used to work in publishing, and she had gotten back into publishing. And she reached out to me and she said, she had no idea that I did all this work, but she reached out to me and she said, hey, I just got back into publishing. I'm working for Wiley & Sons and on the business side. And do you think that there's anyone in Techstars who might be interested in writing a book? Because I'm looking for new authors. And I said, well, interesting that you should ask. I wasn't looking to write a book, but I literally and it was within like a week or two of me finishing these things and getting ready to publish them. I said, I just wrote these blog posts. A bunch of people gave me feedback that maybe there's a book in here. Here they are. What do you think? And she got back to me a couple of days later and said, I think there's absolutely a book in here. Let's do it. And there's a little more involved than that, but it was really just a whole bunch of serendipity. And so, you know, with that, I basically, my jaw hit the floor because I'm like, oh my gosh, this is not what I intended to do. It wasn't the path I was going down. I need to figure this out, but it was certainly an opportunity I didn't want to pass up. And so we went back and forth, we agreed on a whole bunch of stuff, and then including like a deadline that I would deliver a first draft. And, you know, I might be going into a little too much detail here, but I needed it to be finished before my next accelerator program started, because I knew once once the accelerator program started, I wouldn't be able to give the kind of attention it needed. And so my program was starting at the end of January. This was in the middle of November, and that we agreed on everything. And I basically said, okay, I've got 6 weeks to sit down and take these blog posts and turn them into a book. And that's what I did. And then as it turned out, the first draft was pretty good. We did a bunch, you know, we did some copy editing, but I really didn't make very many substantial changes after that first draft. And so that I delivered it to them in January, the initial manuscript, and then we published it in September.
This is so cool because this is one sales book you didn't have to sell.
Yeah. But the truth is, if you really look back at my career, I've been working on this book for 20 years. I just didn't know it.
True.
And so when it came time to talk about it, and you know, like the frameworks in the book, like I've been doing them for so long, they're just really natural. So I was already doing all the stuff in the book. And you know, I think, and I'll tell you, I'll make a little leap here. One of the things that I realized in writing of the book is like, I believe that this book can be for any type of business anywhere, big, small, whether you're a retail shop on mom and pop shop on the corner of a street or a massive global SaaS business, the principles generally apply. However, I felt like I needed to drink my own Kool-Aid and be really specific with who the target audience was. And so I specifically targeted it for early stage pre-series A founders running B2B businesses, but all the principles apply.
Great. So that sort of makes me ask you the obvious question. How did you arrive at this W3 framework?
Yeah. I love telling this story too, because it was, you know, to me, this is how things get the real way. Think most things get creative, which is you do a bunch of things and all of a sudden things click. So I'll preface the story of how I sort of arrived at it with one of the things that I do, and I hesitate to call it a skill, although I use it as a skill, is I like to make things as simple to explain as possible, and so I can take really complex concepts, and as soon as I understand it, I'm pretty good at making them really simple. And I actually, for myself, as a litmus test, I use, if I can't describe it simply, then probably there's something not right. Like, things should be able to be described simply. So whether that's right or wrong, that's the way that I look at things. And so the story of how W3 came about was I was at business.com, and I talk a little bit about this whole genesis in the book, but not in great detail. I was at the company called business.com and brought in to help figure out how to grow and accelerate sales. And at that time, I had a couple of successes. I couldn't point to why. It was all driven off of intuition. And I was working for a CEO who is extremely data-driven and metrics driven, which I hadn't experienced at this level before. And so having good intuition wasn't good enough for him. And when we were going to make, you know, create a strategy and create a plan, there had to be data behind it and a way to measure whether or not we were being successful. And he never actually used those words with me. This is me sort of reflecting back on the conversations. But what he did really, really well as I was developing a plan was to ask me the question why a lot. Like, why do you think this is true? You know, or what is the data you have to support it? So he'd ask me these questions. And through that process at business.com, it was sort of like, I don't want to say it was an epiphany because it happened over the course of several weeks. It was all of a sudden this realization that where we were as a business, we had a muddy definition of who our customer was, what they were buying from us and why it mattered. And I clicked on to those three things and said, okay, we need to define these things. And we defined them. And, you know, that took, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks of digging into the data, myself and my team. And we were wholly focused on really tight definitions of who our customer was, what they were buying from us, and why it mattered. And at the end of that, when we said, okay, we now know exactly those three things with data. So it was no longer what we believed, but we actually had data to support it. It was sort of like obvious to me that this was our W3 and I say that in this context, which is that I had a small team of people working on this, and we wanted to find a way to get the whole company, the whole sales organization, and the whole company aligned and behind this so we can move it forward, because we had so much conviction that we were right. And again, me taking concepts that may be complex or not and trying to make them as simple as possible, I said, for me, it was really obvious to say, great, let's name this thing and call it something that we can describe easily and get everybody behind. So we named it W3, who, what, and why. We described it to the company. Who is our customer? Here's the definition. What are they buying from us? Here's what they're buying from us, and why does it matter to them? Here's what it is. And that simple framework, the whole company was able to understand and believe and get behind. And in that process, we took the company from 7 million to 60 million in a really short amount of time. So we saw it work. So that's where it was born. And I'll be candid in that, like, we did it there, but I didn't yet make the connection that this was like a repeatable framework.
Right.
It took me several more years and companies and this job and, you know, and a bunch of things and testing the same thing and variations of it to suddenly realize, like, nope, this works. And that's not to say that there aren't other frameworks that work. Maybe work better, maybe work worse. There are. But this is a simple framework that if you're looking for something is easy to understand. It is not easy to execute, but it is easy to comprehend.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, as I said, when I looked at it and it appeared, it's obvious, but it's not something that people are doing very diligently, are they?
No, and I would say they're not. They're for sure not. They're assuming that they know these things when they really just have exactly that assumptions. And probably the biggest pitfall that I see there is, forget the what and the why for a second. The majority of companies and CEOs, especially at the early stage, they are afraid to really get super, super, super specific on defining their who. And because of that, they have a bunch of data that they don't know how to analyze. So this is where it gets hard, which is like, how do you encourage a CEO who has this idea of $1 billion TAM to focus their initial market on something that might be like $1 million or $10 million if fully penetrated. And my point is, it's not that your TAM is smaller, it's just that your initial target is smaller and your TAM is still your TAM, but you have to start somewhere. And when you can have confidence that you're going to get yes 100% of the time, you've nailed the market and you will find product market fit there. That is the definition of it. And then once you nail that and you understand in really deeply the attributes of the people who buy, what they're buying and why, it suddenly unlocks this amazing ability to play with those attributes, adding, taking away, evolving, and grow peripherally to eventually meet your entire TAM.
Yeah, but as you are saying this, and as I keep thinking about this product market fit and defining your buyer persona in a very specific manner, what I figure is that it is really hard to do that. It is not an easy place to land.
It's time for a short break. When we come back, we will hear Amos respond to my question on how can a startup really figure the prospective buyer's persona. He has some surprising answers. Stay with us. We'll be right back. You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end. Welcome back. As we went into the break, I asked Amos, how does a startup zero in on their optimum buyer persona?
Yeah, it's emotionally really hard to land there. And you know, I think the way that I think about getting there is just saying, and this is something that I learned from my CEO at business.com, actually, at some point, you just need to put a stake in the ground and say, I'm going to start here. I'm going to be comfortable being wrong. And I'm going to test and measure and not assume that I'm right. And have the patience and discipline to go through that process and say, okay, what am I learning at all steps of the way? And then there's a second part to this, which is really hard to do, which is once you feel like you might be on the right path, take a little bit of time to step back and see if you can disprove why you are right.
Right. Yeah, I get you, because you really want to be sure that you are spending your time and energy in the right direction, especially the kind of companies you mentioned who are like early stage and raised a little capital. Doing this right is so critical for them, right?
That's right. And, you know, the cost of doing it wrong or not doing it is failure. And the cost of taking the time to do it, you still may fail. But at least you will have data along the way to understand why you got to where you got, versus looking back and saying, I just didn't have enough data, or I went too wide, right? It's just, yeah.
So just to get a little bit of clarity, what you're suggesting is the path is that you believe that there is a large, non-homogeneous yet large market which can use your product. Yet you need to start by testing one and see whether it works for them. And then if it works, fine, go deeper or move on and look at the next segment, which together make up the entire TAM.
That's right. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Great. So just to draw a quick parallel, when we started this chat, you said that this book or this framework works for any kind of industry, but I decided to focus it on the early stage companies.
Yes.
That's exactly what you did, right?
That's it. It is written in that way. Yes. Now, I do get a lot of questions from people who fall outside of that.
Right.
How do I use your book? And my first answer is, which part? Because it's really general. Hmm. And then we just talk about, like, okay, what are you trying to accomplish? And in most instances, it's changing either the example or the context or a little bit of the language is probably the biggest thing. And we can talk about it differently.
Right. So would you like to talk a little more about how you structured the book and how you know, early stage companies can actually use it? Because I think it's pretty clear from the structure of the book that you have written it as a user manual, if I may put it that way.
Mm-hmm. That was sort of the intention, which is almost like a recipe book or a playbook.
Yeah.
That is chronological. Don't go to chapter two until you understand and have done the work in chapter one. Don't same with chapter three, right? And some of the chapters, they're like, you can read them all whenever, but some of the chapters, it might be 2 or 3 years before you can put something into effect based on where you are in your life cycle. So I structured it chronologically, and I thought of it as a whether I'm on day zero or day 10,000, but let's assume I'm on day zero, and I'm about to start a company and take this leap. How do I go about validating whether or not I should spend any time building this company on day zero? And that is, you know, W3 is essentially a description in some ways of why you exist. Who are you here to serve with what? Right, it's literally in the W's. And so what I assert is that whether it is explicit or not, every single company in the world starts right there. Even if you say I built this really cool technology, I'm sure there are instances where I'm wrong, but more common is that there is someone in your mind when you've built this really cool technology that can use it, even if it's you, and you're the only user. That's just how the human brain typically works, right? So let's start there. Let's. How do we validate whether or not we even should exist and how we're going to exist? And actually, this is a little bit of an aside, but I have another book coming out. I think it should be out by this fall, which is more of a framework of how to start and run a business, less about sales specifically. But that book actually starts off with a variant on W3, mm-hmm. because I just believe this is where it's where it all starts, whether you want to believe it or not. It is where it actually all starts when you're sitting in the coffee shop. Let's go build this cool thing because we can help this person with this.
Right, right. So tell me some stories. Now, I did read through some of the companies where you sort of connected it backwards, that this is the framework that's sort of repeating itself, and which is how you sort of came to the structure and articulation of it in the way you did. How are you seeing feedback from folks who are actually using it, who possibly don't know you or know you as one of your investee companies?
I think I know the question you're asking, and the way that I'll answer it, so tell me if I'm off here, is the book's been out since September, so it's been out about 5 months now, and there has not been a single week, and in most weeks a single day, where somebody that I do not know is reaching out to me and saying, wow, I can't believe this book wasn't written before. It has changed the way I think about things. Thank you for reading it or for writing it. Or I've read it twice in a weekend, or I've read it twice in a week. This particular thing, I'm getting so much really positive and specific feedback on how it is impacting founders, which has been this amazing, like, it kind of blowing my mind, frankly. Like, I did not write this book. And I hope this was clear when I told you this, the origin story in the beginning. Like, I didn't write this book to make money. And as I've learned, you actually don't make money writing a book. You just don't ever write a book if you want to make money. That's not what, because this thing is doing well and you don't make a lot of money. But for me, it was never about that. It was really about how do I take this thing that I know how to do and how do I help more people at scale. And when I get feedback, like the kind of feedback that I'm getting, it makes 100%, it makes it worth every ounce of energy I've spent towards it. And it is just, I'm so thrilled, which is probably why I'm motivated to write the second one. And I hope it hits half as well.
Right. So would you be able to share any story where somebody has come and said, hey, you know what, this is what I was doing earlier, I read the book, this is what I did, and bingo, this is what happened.
Yeah, gosh, a lot. Let me think of a specific story that's good. There was a founder that, so when I wrote the book, one of the things I did is I went on a book tour and I'll actually pick it back up in the spring. And the book tour was not about sitting behind a desk and signing copies. I really wanted to do something that would be useful for people. And so rather than do that, what I did was I would go to cities and I would put on workshops on just W3.
Okay.
So just the first chapter. And it's an hour long workshop. I would schedule it for an hour and a half so that we could have some Q&A time after. And then if people wanted their book signed, I was happy to sign it. And so I did this in probably 20 cities, probably close to 1,000 people came over all those 20 cities. And I'm getting to the story part. So someone who had read the book came to one of my workshops. In the workshop said, hey, I started to put some of this stuff in place and I'm starting to see some changes. And they're actually in a service related business. It's sort of like they have a product that they use, but they're really a service company. And what the biggest problem that they were having is that they had two problems. One, they couldn't figure out how to grow faster. And two, they couldn't figure out how to get to any sort of repeatability. And those two things are really related. And what they found was that they would bring on a new customer and they'd be like, because they were a service-esque business, their company would, their customer would want one little thing different or wouldn't want something. And it wasn't, they were trying to get to some form of repeatability, even though they were in a service business, so that they can figure out how to grow faster. And so they had done some of the W3 work. Then they came to the workshop and we really, really dug in. And then about 3 or 4 weeks later, they actually called me and said, hey, that was great. Can we do a call? We got on the call and 80% of the call was thank you. And what they saw was that by the thing that they were doing wrong was they weren't defining their customer set narrow enough. They were defining it by industry and location only and thinking that was narrow enough and stopping there. And the thing that they missed for them in particular was industry and location are always things that you can default to, but they weren't really sure of the needs of the company. From a prioritization perspective, they knew what it was, but they weren't considering it in how they were targeting their customers. They weren't considering how they were targeting the role inside of the company. So they were saying, oh, here's a list of roles it could be that we should talk to, but they weren't doing the things to say, like, actually, any company who prioritizes the thing that we do in one of the most five important things and has this specific role and is in this part of their budgeting process is a good customer for us. And so once they were able to define it in that way, they were one, very easily able to say when they were talking to a prospect, you're not a good fit for us now to the prospect. When you meet these criteria, let us know and we're here for you. And when they did identify those people, they were able to lean in and get the yes every time. And so they have seen since then, the beginning, and it's been a little while since I've caught back up with them, but they've seen a much more rapid growth in a really short amount of time and a lot more time not wasted on the wrong customers, thinking like if we beat their door down long enough, we'll eventually get there.
Is there any thought of actually putting a workshop which is linked to this out there? So folks who read your book could potentially attend or look at a workshop on these concepts?
So I'm thinking about putting something online together that would be an interactive workshop on it. I haven't figured out where and how I want to do that yet, but it is something that is very top of mind that I will likely do in the first half of this year. The challenge, and this, I think this is a good challenge, but the challenge is the way that I do the W3 workshop is very interactive. And most of it is truly a workshop where in an hour, I probably do 15 minutes or 20 minutes of talking maximum. other than the interaction around the work that the people are doing. And so when I do it in person, it's really easy because we can just have a conversation.
Right.
And I've experimented at Techstars with doing them online, and I haven't come up with a structure yet that I love, that I think adds the same value that it does in person. When I figure that out, I'll do it. But I think that I still have some work to do before I can do something that someone that's online says, wow, this was worth, you know, the money I paid or the time I put in, or, you know, however I decide to structure it.
Right, right. Great. Is there anything we are missing?
Well, I would say if this is intriguing to you at all, you can get the book on Amazon.com. It's called Sell More Faster, the ultimate sales playbook for startups. If it's okay, I will share with you a little hint of what the next book is going to be. I don't actually have a title for it yet. I should hopefully have that soon. But essentially, it's similar. It's five foundational workshops or concepts in workshop form in a book that every company needs, every company in the world needs to do, regardless of size or stage, in order to survive and grow. And the five things are: one, knowing or having a theory of your W3, which is why do you exist? Two is something that I call finding your revenue formula, which is essentially what is the mathematical equation for your business at scale? What do you believe it is today? And how do you figure out all of the things you need to do to validate whether you're right or wrong? Mm-hmm. This is another workshop I actually teach at Techstars. The third is around product prioritization. And so it's taking all of the things that you have done in figuring out the things you need to validate in your revenue formula. How do you prioritize it and collect the right data so that you can learn and move forward? The fourth is around metrics and becoming metrics driven. So it's taking the work that you're doing in the product prioritization and measuring it and learning how to measure it to move your revenue formula forward. And then the fifth part is taking all of that, wrapping it in, and building a plan and a financial model that you manage your business against on a day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month basis, so that you can learn going forward. Not so that you can reflect on what you did, that's important too, but so that you can take what you did and know what you should do next. And so that's going to be coming out this fall.
Sounds wonderful. I'm sure you'll find a great title. And if I hear anything from the listeners, I'll pass them on to you.
Please do.
Okay. Amos, this was great, and it was really nice speaking to you, and I hope that we'll be able to continue this dialogue about refocusing early stage company energy into revenue, and I would love to have you back to talk about that sometime soon.
Thank you so much for reaching out, and I really, really enjoyed this.
Thank you.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos, and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
Coming up in the next episode with Brant Pinvitik is an entertaining and enlightening discussion on his breakthrough book, The 3-Minute Rule. He knows a thing or two about entertainment, folks, as an award-winning film director and veteran television producer involved in creating shows like The MasterChef.
Well, you know, I've been doing it in Hollywood, pitching television shows for so long. I just developed a system of how to explain an idea really cleanly, really quickly, with all the valuable points. We've sort of been taught like you can make big promises in a really quick, short pitch and people will be interested. In today's world, it's not the way it works, right? If you hear somebody in an elevator make a big proclamation, oh, hey, I can make you 10 times your money on an investment by the end of the year, you know, we've been taught that the person's going to lean in and be like, "Ooh, wow, that sounds interesting. Tell me more." And really what happens is as soon as someone hears a big claim or something spectacular or the features or the details, like, they just don't believe you. That's the problem. And so what I teach is a completely different method called the inform and lead method. It's a form of storytelling that we use in Hollywood when we're trying to build characters, when we're trying to build to a conclusion. Movies that are 2 hours long build with the characters and inform you to the big conclusion. And you can do that in a 3-minute window. Basically, where you, what you want them to feel, if you want your audience to think they can make 10 times their money on this great investment, you don't state that. You want to lead them with the information that makes them start to think that. They're thinking in their head, wow, this could be a great investment. This might be like really good. Could be maybe 10 times.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of weeks with great conversations with Rand Fishkin, Benjamin Hardy, Lisa Magnusson, and many more. Stay tuned. Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it.
This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.